NBA Strayer. How are you going? Jeez, big day. It's Thursday, June 17. I am your host, James Clements. I'm a writer sometimes. Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, whoever else wants to cross these greasy palms of some of that folding stuff here in Larry Armour Studios, getting further into less lockdown in Victoria. What a world. Anyway, we are here keeping you completely up to date with all the lowdown, all the ins and outs of the NBA playoffs while repping Straya just a bit. That's what we do. We don't take these things too seriously either. Just keep that in mind before we get stuck right in today because it's going to get a bit wild. We leave all this serious stuff to the nerds. But we are going to tell it like it is. That's what we do here. Big day. This was probably one of the single most insane days we've had in 635 eps, four seasons, 5 years we've been doing NBA Australia. We've got two coaches fired. Kawhi's out with an ACL injury. CP3's in the Rona protocols. The Mavs are a mess. LeBron's whinging. Game 5s of Sixers Hawks was a historic meltdown. Jazz Clippers had a playoff P explosion without Kawhi. And it just kept on coming. The hits. Ben Simmons was in the DMs. He missed every shot he tried to take. LaMelo won Rookie of the Year. The Boomers cut Thon. Unbelievable. Jokic was riding a horse. Anyway, we've got the lots to get through. So we'll talk about the games in the NBA Straight Game Wraps. We've got That's Not a Knife. Oh, mate, no, mate. Spud of the Night. Better than Lonzo Ball. We've got Yeah, Nas. We've got the Unpopular Opinion of the Day. And we've got our Back Takehouse, where we're serving up a flame grilled take. There's Australian Player Watch, boy howdy, and it's Thursday. We do a Shane Heal shoot-a-shoot-shoot-a-shot light-em-up award. In this case, it's not about lighting them up, though. We're going to preview for Game 6 of Nets-Bucks tomorrow as well, a pick and preview for that game. And we'll finish up with a brand new Diary of Stephen Adams. But this is an absolute rip-snorted, chock-a-block episode of NBA Australia. So, episode 635, let's go!
This is Matthew Dellavedova, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack!
You better watch out for the historic collapse attack if you're the Sixers, and then the Chuck attack if you're the Sixers, because he came after them. Or you better watch out for the Axe if you're a coach. Jesus. Turns out this year, Mad Monday just comes like 2-3 weeks later, so I guess this year you've really got to watch out for the attack of those exit interviews, those KPI reviews. Wow. Absolutely insane scenes, but so much to get through today. Let's start the day. The way we start every show here in NBA Australia with the daily whip around. Where to fucking start? So Kawhi's out for Game 5 with a knee injury. CP3's in the Rona protocol. Scott Brooks got fired by the Wiz. Well, not brought back. Stan Van Gundy got fired by the Pelicans. The Mavs are in turmoil as Donnie Nelson leaves. Luke is pissed about that. LaMelo wins Rookie of the Year, which is a travesty. LeBron wants the season to basically be a lot shorter. He came out and told everybody, I told y'all. What are you going to do? Do an NBL season now, LeBron? Jokic was riding a horse. Out there doing a bit of harness racing. The Boomers, they cut their 25-man squad down to 19 for Tokyo 2020 and 2021. Ben Simmons slid into a chick's DMs. And then we had two games. What? What a world. Right, let's unpack it. Kawhi. Oh, geez. No laughing matter. So after the game the other day, so game 4, where he sort of banged knees, there was like a little bit of a moment where you're like, oh, he's limping. That's not great. But Kawhi, he's a robot. We've seen this before. He sort of limps around, grabs his hammy. He's like, nah, I'm good. They asked him about it after the game. He's like, nah, it's good. And I'll be good to go. And then he wasn't. So this is the thing when you got to watch with knees, the knee swelling the day after the game. Turns out that's exactly what happened. Sitting out in game 5, their fears are that there might be a little bit more damage than suspected. It's an ACL injury, according to reports. He is out indefinitely. You've got to have, like, fingers crossed that it's just an ACL sprain or something you can actually come back from rather than anything else. Because if it's a tear, I mean, it's all over Red Rover. But it's one of those weird ones. Kawhi is such a weird unit that your post-game interview, you're never going to get anything out of him. You get less out of him when you ask him about injuries, and then you turn around, he's not playing game five. Unbelievable. It makes today's game even more remarkable, really. Chris Paul is in the Rona protocols. This dude cannot catch a break. Every year, it's something else. Out indefinitely, which is obviously a bit of a problem, because even though the Suns are off at the moment, getting a nice little bit of rest, that's pretty handy. The Western Conference Finals are still very much scheduled to start next week, and we did just see the Clippers get over the Jazz today. They're up 3-2. And where are we? We're Wednesday, America time. They'll play Game 6 on Friday. Maybe the NBA can scooch out a bit of this, but either way, like, it's scheduled to start next Tuesday, Wednesday, America time. CP3 is apparently already vaccinated. And it's weird that they've not really said anything about whether or not he's tested positive or exposed to it. I think there was a test from a couple of days ago. So he's a couple of days into it, maybe. And that sort of throws up the NBA's new protocols as to what they do and how they deal with these things into a little bit of a tizzy, right? Because it's been a 10-day quarantine that you got to do if you're the NBA players who's tested positive or from the resolution of symptoms. You've then got to go undergo a cardiac screen and all this other stuff once he begins working out again. But either way, very much up in the air as to whether or not CP3 would be good to go for games one or two in any Suns finals, like Western Conference final series, which is crazy. But here we are. And then you look at all the pictures from Arizona, from the Phoenix games. They welcomed them back with basically a full state, a full bunch of people giving them a parade. You've got lots of hugs going around. You got basically full houses in Colorado and in Arizona. And people are like, wow, how did he get it, man? It's like, well, I'll tell you how. Because you're in America and it's a shit show. And everyone's like, mask? But that's impinging upon my freedoms. Now, I'll tell you what. I've obviously been bitching and moaning about masks over here in Victoria for a while. But shit. Vaccinations, who knows how it's all going to work out. Either way, CP3 out for the moment. It's going to be a close one. Fascinated to see how this all rolls out. The other big news, LaMelo Ball was announced as the Rookie of the Year winner for this year, which is a fucking travesty. And we're going to go into it later in year Nas. But there you go. Hashtag spoiler alert. It's some bullshit. LeBron came out today. He's like, I told y'all that this was a bit fucky this year, didn't I? So he tweeted out, they all didn't want to listen to me about the start of the season. I knew exactly what would happen. I only wanted to protect the well-being of the players, which ultimately is the product and benefit of our game. Emphasis, LeBron's. These injuries isn't just part of the game. It's lack of pure rim rest. Rest before starting back up. 8, possibly 9 All-Stars has missed playoff games, most in league history. This is the best time of year for our league and fans, but missing a ton of our fave players, it's insane. If there's one player that know about the body and how it works all year round, it's me! Dr. LeBron, no. I speak for the health of all our players, and I hate to see this many injuries this time of year. Sorry, fans. Wish you guys were seeing all your fave guys right now. And he's not wrong. He did still, however, collect all of his game checks this year. He didn't sit out for fear of, being hurt. He did agree to it. He's a big part of the Players Association. At the same time, 8, possibly 9 All-Stars. Anthony Davis, James Harden, Kyrie, Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, Jalen Brown, Joel Embiid, Chris Paul could be the 9th, Kawhi today. That's 9. That's unreal. But where was this energy during the season, LeBron? It's the exact same thing. You cut your game checks. That's fine. You cashed them. And where was this during the season? Similar to vibes to your, oh, geez, now that we're in the play-in tournament, who came up with this, man? They should be fired, eh? All right. Where was this fucking all year? LeBron, literally, if he was this passionate about it and saying, I'm here for the well-being of our players, he would have staged a strike. Going, fuck him. We all need, in just fuck off the All-Star break. I don't care. No one's playing. And we also need a couple of weeks here and there as well, you idiots. Because we're turning around from a bubble year into this one. We need a break. Come on, LeBron. Put your money where your mouth is. Otherwise, you're just yelling, pissing into the wind like all of us. Scott Brooks. He's out in Washington. As I said, at the top. Not fired. They were negotiating a new contract, didn't come to an agreement. He walked away. They moved on. Tommy Shepard said, I wouldn't say it didn't work out. I just think it's time to move on, which is pretty interesting. This is Russell Westbrook's long-time coach that they're firing. And especially, you know, after the half season we just got out of the Wiz, where we had Rusty and Beal healthy and firing on all cylinders, they look the goods. So Scotty Brooks might have gotten a bit of short shrift here, but I'm going to talk about this again in year nows. But one thing from Tommy Shepard, the GM there in Wizardland, gave us this gem. It's show biz, not show friends. Oh, love it. I'm going to use that all the time. Show biz, man, not show friends. It's business. That means you can fire pricks. All right, good. Stan Van Gundy, 1 year and gone in New Orleans. Not a giant surprise. Bit weird that it took this long. But it turns out it seemed like David Griffin and the New Orleans Brains Trust had sort of been sitting around talking to Stan about what they were going to do for next year. Looks like there's a bit of a difference in opinion. And it sort of got to a point where they're like, Stan, look, I think we might have to move on. Stan's like, sweet, I'll take my money now. See ya. And off they went. So now we've got six coaching vacancies. We've got Boston, Portland, Indy, New Orleans, Washington, and Orlando. And when we have a day, i.e. tomorrow, where we don't have literally fucking everything going on in the world, we might rank those and pick some landing spots for some candidates. How's that sound? Tomorrow? All I know is it'd be cool to see Becky Hammon get one. But otherwise, six coaching vacancies. Whereas at the end of the season, it was kind of a bit like, oh shit, is anyone going to move on? And then boom. Literally when teams sort of are sitting down for these exit interviews, they're finding out some stuff and figuring it out. So good on them. We'll have more on that on Yenaz. Jokic! What's this about him being the biggest jockey ever? That's right, he's doing a bit of harness racing there in Serbia. Just a nice fun video of him riding a horse. He's the world's biggest bloody jockey. Just a harness racing MVP as well. It's a bit weird, but that's classic Joker. What are you going to do, Joker? I'm going to go home to Serbia like 4 days after we got knocked out. What are you going to do? I don't ride my horse. You ride horses? Yeah, but like in a little buggy behind them because I'm fucking 7'2 and giant. Yeah, good on you. Mavs! My God, it's taken this long to even get to this one. So, I didn't really touch on this one like 2 days ago. There was a big report by The Athletic about the Mavs essentially kind of having an alleged shadow GM in Haralabob Vulgaris, right? The former professional NBA gambler that Cuban brought on, you know, professional smart guy who he very much thinks he knows better than pretty much everybody. And he was brought on, you know, as a quantifiable statistics kind of research and development kind of role with the Mavs, where it's essentially like the Cuban thing. Let's hire all the smart people and figure it out. Cuban, when he's like basically reacting to this piece by The Athletic, he's like, this is bullshit. It's a bunch of opinion. They didn't even fucking talk to me. Only after I went live. It's fucking bullshit. It's all bullshit. 2 days later. It's like a SpongeBob cut. 2 days later. Donnie Nelson, 24 years into his tenure, the president of basketball operations, the GM, the dude who's done everything for this team for almost 2.5 decades, from drafting Dirk to drafting Luka, there's a title in between. Gone. Now, me thinketh that Cuban might protesteth too much. This 100% smacks of an internal power struggle. Haralabob has said in the past, yes, I would be very, very keen on being a GM of a basketball team. And I can tell you now, I'm probably smarter than most of them already. This is before he had this job with the Mavs. And it's interesting that this piece sort of broke down about how Haralabob allegedly would sort of be talking to Cuban and the coaching staff and Donnie Nelson about rotations, about shots, about players they needed to trade for. He's signing on or off on trades as well. And it seemed very much like that piece in The Athletic was very much like, well, this is a bit weird. People in the organization think it's a bit strange, like he's some sort of shadow GM. It's like, well, if he's got an actual bit of power, of course they're going to ask him his opinion about moves they're making, right? And it obviously seems like some in the scouting department, etc., were kind of like, oh, he's getting a bit too much power. It's a bit weird. They're not listening to us anymore. It's some money bullshit, right? The thing is, in that Athletic article, they were like, well, let's see how Luka likes this. Because Donnie Nelson's his guy. He loves Donnie. And Luka is apparently in the background going, oh, it's a bit weird, isn't it? I don't like that guy. He told me to chill out one game. And then it expounds on that in the article to basically go, well, maybe Luka won't want to stick around long term for the Mavs. And everyone's like, if you read it, you're just like, all right, That's a pretty fucking long bow, you idiots. Then 2 days later, Donnie Nelson's gone. Absolutely unreal scenes. The Mavs. Every time you hear Cuban go, that's bullshit. We've got no problems here. Boom. They fire somebody. Or there's like weirdest, you know, weird allegations always floating around. But this is how this stuff goes, isn't it? The most powerful person in the organization is obviously Cuban. The second most powerful person in an organization is who Cuban listens to. It's the same with any job. Who's the boss? Right. Who's the second most important person? Who the boss listens to. Boom. So, very interested to see how this all rolls out. Michael Finley is already being touted as a replacement. Kind of love that because I loved Finley when I was growing up. Michael Finley was a gun. Anyway, Ben Simmons apparently DM'd somebody the night before Game 5. Had a laugh about that. Then he went 4 of 14 from the free throw line. Now I'm not laughing as much. Anyway, the Boomers, they cut 25 players down to 19 before Vegas training camp coming up. The 6 cuts were Deng Adel. Not a surprise after his pretty horrible year. Will the Thrill Magnay, friend of the program, Mitch McCarron, Willie McDowell-White, that sucks. Thon McCurr, oh, Kung Fu Thon, and Mitch Norton. All gone. A couple of blokes playing in the NBL playoffs, well, finals right now, right? In McCarron, Mitch Norton, and Will the Thrill. Might do a bit more on this tomorrow about the squad and the 19 remaining, but, you know, feeling pretty good about it. And then finally, Jesus Christ, this is just the news bit. What a day. What an absolutely insane day. The last bit of news is obviously that one NBA player has tested positive for the coronavirus out of 164 tested in the last week. Chris Paul. Yeah, no shit. Unbelievable. What a day. Now, should we get into some game wraps? I think we bloody well ought to, Jimmy. Speed it up!
Game wraps, 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 game wraps,
game wraps. The game wraps are brought to you by DraftKings Australia. The playoffs are here. They're crazy. They're awesome. And there's no better time to play daily fantasy. That's right. Our boys from Down Under are battling out for the top spot. And thanks to our friends at DraftKings Australia, you can get on the action as well and take on the competition. If you think you've got what it takes, then you can take home millions in prizes and entry is cheap as. So if you're new to Daily Fantasy, it's super easy. All you have to do is click on the links on our socials, on our website, or go to dkng.co/Australia, create an account, join a contest, pick your players. The classic one's the easy one, right? You stay within the $50,000 salary cap. They've all got different rankings and stuff like that. Pick your players, sit back. Watch your players try to climb the leaderboard, win massive prizes. Pretty awesome. DKNG.co/Australia. Get right around it. We've got a contest, an NBA Australia contest coming up as well. Can't wait for that one. But either way, get around it right now. Get used to it. And then have a crack at me. Your mate Jimmy. That should be great fun. Either way, I play Daily Fantasy every day. Cruising at the moment. Had a really good one today. I got right on Mook Morris and Paul George. And crushed it with Embiid. So, pretty good. Feeling pretty good about that one. Right, game previews. Atlanta beat Philly 109-106. Yep, game 5. Atlanta win it 109-106. 26-point comeback from the Hawks. Crazy game. Upsy-daisy game. Everything was going right for Philly, and then it wasn't. They started off incredible. Embiid was 8 of 8. He had 17 points in the first quarter. The big turnaround from his 0 of 12 in game 4 in the second half. Curry and Korkmaz were hitting everything. Simmons was dunking shit everywhere. The Sixers had a 14-point lead. But then, the start of the second, right, you could sort of see essentially what was to come in the fourth quarter. It was scrappy as hell. The big difference for Philly was that Matty T, got a couple of threes to go, and it made a big difference. Because, look, the Hawks went a little bit cold. The Sixers just stuck with it. They got up as much as 25, 26. 22-point lead going into the second half. Embiid had 24 and 10 in the first half. It's all clicking. You're feeling good. Quick run out of the half by Atlanta. Got it under 20. And then Embiid and Curry, again, answered pretty handily. He's back up to 24. For big chunks of this third quarter, Seth Curry was the Sixers offense. He's knocking in threes, getting nifty passes from Embiid. There's some nice screens and curls and bang. He couldn't miss. He was just smashing threes. Bogdanovich had 5 fouls by the middle of the third quarter. That was a big problem for the Hawks. They couldn't get him going. At the end of the third, they're still up 18. There's a little bit of a run at the end of the third, but look, you're still up 18 going to the fourth quarter. You're like, we're cool. Curry had 25 at that point, Embiid 31. And then boom. 15-2 run by the Hawks, and it's an 11-point game. It had been 24 points, 2 minutes left in the third quarter. And then suddenly it's an 11-point game as soon as you turn around. It was absolutely nuts. We had Lou Will and Seth Curry going back and forth, hammering tongs. It's still an 11-point game halfway through the fourth quarter. Then John Collins banks in a three. 8-point game. And that was the turning point because the Sixers realized that Embiid and Curry were their only offense. There was nothing else. Tobias Harris couldn't hit anything. Simo couldn't hit anything. Then Hacker Simo begins. The first one he hits a couple. Well, they actually tried in the third quarter as well just to try to fuck up Philly's offense. Worked a little bit then, but then Curry got going. It didn't happen this time. Hacker Simo happened. He hits both the first time. It's an 8-point game. And Embiid takes a three from the top of the key where you're like, look, if he feels comfortable shooting it, that's fine. The thing is, it's an 8-point game, game five, in a playoff series that you need to win, and you've already let them back into it. Joel, I feel like you might need to force something a little bit better than a long three there. The Hawks are missing shots. They hack Simo again. This time, he misses both. Capella dunks. It's a 6-point game, and this is it. The Sixers are done from here on. They shit the bed. They turn it over after the timeout. Nobody has any clue what's actually... There's two timeouts back-to-back. They shit it. They turn it over. Trey scores on a mid-ranger, 4-point game. Embiid airballs a horrible, horrible, horrible mid-ranger at the end of the shot clock. There's just no plan. No plan whatsoever for this Philly offense. Tobias Harris is standing there with his dick in his hands. Ben Simmons has got his thumb up his ass. Seth Curry's like, what the fuck? Come on! And boom, Embiid airball. Trey scores. It's a floater. It's a 2-point game. Tobias Harris chucks up an absolute rubbish brick. Trey gets fouled on a three by Matty T with a minute and a half left. Hits all three free throws. Atlanta have a lead. It's unbelievable. The Sixers could not get anything to go. Gallo then. There's another miss down the end by the Sixers. Gallo comes back at the end of the shot clock. Hits a massive fadeaway. Atlanta are up three. It ends up being a 15-0 run by the Hawks to close it out. The Sixers didn't make a shot for more than 6 minutes down the stretch. They blow a 26-point lead and a 99.1% win probability. Teams that had been up 18 going into the fourth quarter in the playoffs were 5-615. They'd won 615 times to 5 losses prior to this. And Trae Young closes them out. Absolutely insane. Joel Embiid could not shake anything loose. Seth Curry couldn't hit anything. Korkmaz couldn't hit anything. Shake Milton was terrified. And this was the big problem. They were all afraid. They were all afraid. Every single one of them was shitting their pants. You see the ball skipping around the perimeter. You saw it in game three as well. Or game four. Where it's like, oh shit, we don't know who wants to take this. No one wants to take it. Fuck. And then Shake Milton would cough the ball up to Seth Curry for that brick at the end of game four. And boom, here we are. Absolute scenes for the Sixers. 15 turnovers. They go 13-30 from three. Embiid ends up with 37-13-5. Absolutely rubbish in the fourth quarter. Absolutely rubbish. Seth Curry, you can't waste a 36-point Seth Curry flamethrower game and expect to win the series. That's what they did. He hit 7-12 from three. He was awesome. 13-19 from the floor. Literally, only Joel Embiid and Seth Curry scored for the Sixers after halftime on actual field goal attempts. Absolutely insane. Simmons hit a couple of free throws. Nobody else did fuck all. It's incredible. Tobias Harris turtled at the moment that this got difficult. 4 points and 2 of 11 shooting. Hashtag spoiler alert. He might be involved in Spud of the Night. Only starter in the negative plus minus as well. Simmons bottled it. 8 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, a steal and a block. 2 turnovers. Ben Simmons after game four was like, yeah, man, I know that we need to be... way more aggressive. I need to be more aggressive to help this team win. He had 4 field goal attempts in this game. 4! He went 4 of 14 on free throws. He missed 10 free throws in a game. They lost by 3. And everyone's always like, oh, well, you can't blame just one thing for a loss. I'm pretty sure if you miss 10 free throws and lose a game by 3, it's probably going to impact that final fucking score. Korkmaz goes 2 of 7 for his 8 points. Shake looks shaky as fuck. 1 of 5 from the floor for his 5 points, Shake Milton. Georgie Boy Hill, 1 of 5 as well, 2 points. Matty T was the only good bench player. 6 points, 2 of 2 from 3. But then, even Aussie Matty T, who I love, just dearly, had that silly foul on Trae Young shooting that three that gave the Hawks the lead. But just an absolute shit show from the Sixers, not named Curry or Embiid. They went 10 of 36 combined, 4 of 14 from 3. That's right, non-Curry or Embiid players went 6 for 22 from 2 in this game. There were 3 missed dunks. Simmons missed a dunk, Dwight missed a dunk, and Embiid missed a dunk. It's like, how do you miss dunks? Jesus. Anyway, it all falls apart. The Hawks, Trae Young had 39 and 7. He was awesome. 10 of 23 from the floor, 2 of 6 from 3, but 17 of 19 from the stripe. Gee, it must be nice if your best player can actually hit free throws. Embiid did, but still. Unbelievable. John Collins, 3 of 4 from 3. Huge banked in 3 late, as mentioned. Really made it incredibly difficult for the Sixers because kept them right in it. That's where the game turned. It gave them a hint. Right bloody there. He banks in that 3, tries another one, misses that one, but still got it. He ends up with a massive 19 and 11, 2 blocks. Clint Capela was eaten up by Embiid early, but had that late dunk that made it very difficult for the Sixers. He ends up with 6 points, 8 rebounds. Kevin Huerta was horrible, 0 of 7 from the floor. He would have been a shoe-in for Spud of the Night, but the Sixers, hashtag, there you go. Okongwu was handy as well, 6 and 5 in 8 minutes. He's a gun, the rookie. I love Onyeka Okongwu. That dude is big, he's quick, he doesn't take shit, and he fucking hurts you when he fouls. And then the two game breakers. Because look, we can all just fuss over Trae Young and how great he was, but this game does not get won by the Hawks if it weren't for Danilo Gallinari. 16 points, 8 assists, 6 of 10 from the floor, 3 of 4 from 3. He was amazing. Hit that massive end of the shot clock turnaround. And Lou Will. Oh, sweet Lou. He had that lemon pepper spice on today. He was a plus 31 in this game. 15 points, goes 7-11 from the floor. How was his first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, though? We had a Lou Will 2, a Lou Will assist on a 3, a Lou Will assist on another 2. Lou Will hits a 2, Lou Will hits a floater, Lou Will hits a step back 2, Lou Will hits a 3. That is unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. He goes on a 9-zip run by himself. Drags the Hawks into this game, gets them down to 11 points, and went from there. Absolutely insane game from Lou Will. Stepped up when needed, and the crazy part was, this was in Philly. So, this is a story all about how my league got flipped and turned upside down. I'd like to take a minute, just have some fun, to tell you how I blew a 26-point lead to Trae Young. Atlanta, 3-2. Clippers without Kawhi. Beat the Utah Jazz 119-111, which is absolutely crazy. Insane start. Bojan Bogdanovic became the first player in NBA history to hit 6 threes in the first quarter of a playoff game since Devin Booker did it about a week and a bit ago. Crazy. 15 of 24 from downtown. First quarter for the two teams combined. But the thing is, the Jazz just decided to go, fuck it, we won't play any defense today. 37-36 after one. Utah then threatened a bit, blow this out. Look, it got wilder after that. Reggie Jackson hit a 3 in the second quarter, and the Clippers led. And you're like, how did this all happen? Bojan's shooting fucking flames out of his fingers, and the Clippers lead. But then Utah climb back into it. Donnie Mitchell's doing great shit. They get up 10, and then Paul George hits a 3. Then he and Mook just keep at it. 2.5 minutes left. Mook steps over Rudy Gobert, and it's only a 6-point lead again. You're like, how did this just happen? There was no point scored by the Jazz outside of 2 threes from Donnie in the last 5 minutes of the second quarter. That's how it happened. Bojan had been on fire, but he had 2 shots at pretty nice open threes as time expired at the end of the half. Misses both. So at the half, the Jazz had made 17 threes. They had 1 missed 2, and they only had a 5-point lead. They made 17 threes in a half and only led by 5. That's how bad their defense was. Paul George was scoring. Well, he had 22 in the first half. He shot 9 of 14 in that half. And it was absolutely crazy. The Clippers came out of the blocks really, really quickly in the third quarter as well. They outscored the Jazz 13-5 in the first 3 and a bit minutes. Took a lead and then just took control. The Jazz went completely ice cold from downtown. They went 0 of 10 in the third quarter from 3. It gets to the fourth quarter. And you're like, what is happening? The Jazz have completely shit the bed, just like our blokes over there in Philly. Boom. So your six, was it the 5-point Clipper lead, had suddenly turned into a 9-point Clipper lead going into the fourth, just because Mook was crushing it, Paul George was crushing it. Reggie Jackson woke up in the fourth quarter as well, stepped up big time. Jingles got a couple of shots to go, which was pretty nice. Everyone else on the offense, though, for the Jazz was falling apart. Jazz missed 13 threes in a row. They were down 10, 6 and a bit minutes left. Paul George then, you look at him, he's gassed. He's done. He has a bad turnover. Reggie has a bad turnover. There's a 7-zip run by the Jazz. They get back within 3, and then bang! Reggie Jackson, personal 5-zip run. It was absolutely insane. He hit a massive just rainbow 3, and then a fall-away 2 over the top of Rudy Gobert. Insane stuff. Donnie finally hits a 3 in response, though. It's the first they've hit in the second half. Gets it back to 5. Paul George draws a nice foul, gets the free throws. Bojan hits a 3. It's a 4-point game again. But then Paul George gets an and 1, and that is almost where the game finishes, because Donnie Mitchell, he generates about 3 or 4 different looks down the stretch here. He misses 3 threes that are so wide off that you're like, did he try to pass it off the backboard? What is he doing? He's got an ankle injury. We know that's fucked. But wow. I mean, you get that on the big jobs, but geez, he missed them. Royce O'Neal missed a corner 3 that was huge, and you felt at that moment it's just a little bit too much for the Jazz. Bojan hit one, as mentioned, to get it to 4, but it just never got close again, and the Jazz did not get over the hump. This is without Kawhi. The Jazz, one of the worst defensive showings you'll ever see with a team without their number one option. Absolutely insane stuff. Almost as bad as the Bucks yesterday. Here we go. 35 of 80 go the Jazz. 35 of 80. 20 of 54. They made 17 threes in the first half, and that pretty much tells the story of this game, doesn't it? 17 in the first half, 3 in the second. They go ice cold. They didn't have the chops to step up, get the win. Donnie has 21, goes 6 and 19 from the floor, 4 of 14 from 3, playing on one leg. You can't really fault him. Bojan was incredible, 32 points, 7 threes in the first half, ends up 9 of 17. That's a franchise record. Rudy goes 17 and 10, 6 of 8 from the floor, not bloody bad. Pump faking in the paint, though. Rudy, you're 7'3". The Clippers, their biggest dude is 6'8". What are you doing? Jingles had 12, 6, and 6, 1 of 5 from downtown, though. He had one late that I was certain was going to go down that would have cut the lead back to 3. Just not his night shooting from downtown. It was pretty bloody good otherwise. Royce O'Neal had one of those games. He was really good in the first half, and then in the second half, he was probably the Clippers' third or fourth best player. He could not hit anything. He got roasted a couple of times on D, and it was brutal to watch. Ends up with 12 points on 4 of 11 shooting, but he was 1 of 4 in the third and 0 of 3 from 3 in the fourth. So 1 of 7 in that second half. That was brutal. Jordan Jeremy Clarkson, he had 15 points, 3 rebounds, goes 4 of 9 from downtown, but 5 of 12 overall. And again, didn't give him the scoring punch they really needed right down the stretch, because he went 0 of 6 in the fourth quarter for Jordan Jeremy Clarkson is going to get overlooked by like the sort of struggles of Donnie Mitchell going 3 of 14. But as a team, they went 13 of 43 in that fourth quarter. 13 of 43. They took 5 more shots than the Clippers and went 13 of 43. Absolutely brutal. That's a beatdown, I'll tell you that much. But look, Donnie hobbled. No Conley. The favors got played off the court. Oni got played off as well. Niang got roasted a couple of times on D. So with Jordan Jeremy Clarkson hitting nothing in that fourth quarter, the rest of the bench, just nothing there. Niang played 5.5 minutes. The only shot he hit all game in that fourth quarter, but got absolutely killed the rest of the time. He got straight killed, I'll tell you that much.
So he got straight killed!
Which sort of stinks, but here we are. But no Conley, Donnie hobbled. Look, the Jazz probably still should have won this game. They got dominated by a Clippers team that played small. The Utah Jazz are at home. Just a brutal showing from the Jazz. The Clippers, look, massive, massive, massive playoff P game. As a team, they go 51%, 16 of 40 from downtown. Really good stuff. 12 of 22 goes playoff P. 3 of 9 from downtown. 10 of 11 from free throws. 37, 16, and 5. He was awesome. Mook had 25. Did some good work inside. He went 3 of 4 from 3, but wow. To see him just work over some of those Jazz defenders was pretty gnarly. Reggie Jackson had 12 points in the fourth quarter. He crushed it. Ends up with 22, 8 of 15 shooting. T-Man had a massive dunk on Rudy. He had 13 points. 13 points? Sure. Frenchie Batum. I steal your money, Charlotte. 9 points, 4 steals. He was, look, pretty handy at times. Duckman, Luke Kennard, went 2 of 4 from 3 for his 6 points. They had Pat Bev out there. Rondo for 9 minutes. Zoob's got some run. But again, Ty Lue just went, fuck it, we're playing small. Don't care. I'm rolling with my guys down the stretch. And that's exactly what happened. Got them the win. Huge stuff by the Clippers without Kawhi. Take a 3-2 lead. Unbelievable stuff. So now we've got 3 series at 3-2. Gonna have 3 game sixes. You love that. Can we get 3 game sevens? I don't know. But let's do an NBA Australia approved performance of the night.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
Lou Will, Gallo, Trae Young. They all stepped up. They hit shots when they needed to. They crushed it. Lou Will in the first half of that fourth quarter, amazing. Trae Young down the stretch, incredible. Gallo, that turnaround fadeaway, beautiful. There's a freedom, though, when you make to making shots when you're down big, right? It's like, ah, fuck it. Like, what is the consequence? We're already losing. There's no stress. I'm just going to free myself up. I'm going to try. And, hey, if it goes in, it goes in. If not, it doesn't. Thing is, they all went in. That was incredible. What a showing by Lou Will in that fourth quarter, though. Putting all the young bucks to the sword. Trae Young down the stretch again. Just showing that he's got massive fucking stones. And to finish even with a line that is just massive, despite not shooting completely great, but 39 points on 23 shots is still nothing to fuck around with. Unbelievable. 39 points, 7 assists, 10 of 23 from the floor, 2 of 6 from downtown, 17 of 19 from the free throw line. Meanwhile, you got Simo going 4 of 14. That's pretty big. But come on, man. Playoff P. Playoff P. We give him a lot of shit here on NBA Australia when he deserves it. And look, for anybody out there who wants to fucking, oh, well, why are you giving Ben Simmons shit now, Jimmy? That's how it goes. You get your props when you deserve them. You get shit on when you deserve it. I calls it how I sees it. There's nothing else going on here. Settle the fuck down. Oh, it's just tall poppy syndrome. No, it's not. Get the fuck out of here. I give Ben Simmons the biggest amount of props ever. Playoff P. Of course I love shitting on him when he's shit. But when he's good, like he was today, that's fucking awesome. What a game. He gave it his all today. He was fucked in the fourth quarter. Completely gassed. Couldn't miss in the first half. But then found a reserve. Just hit crucial buckets down the stretch. That and one that he drew was just like right at the end of the game was absolutely massive and really salted the game away. Had another bucket just before that where you're like, dude, Paul George is fucking on one. He became the only player in Clipper franchise history to have 35, 15, and 5 in a playoff game. That is unreal. 37 points on 12 of 22 shooting. The thing is, according to ESPN stats and info, one of those attempts came uncontested. So 12 of 22 with basically every single shot being contested. And then on the flip side, with his defense, he held Utah players that he guarded to 4 of 13 shooting, forced 2 turnovers as their primary defender. Utah went 1 of 6 on shots that he properly contested and had 2 blocks. Playoff P! Where's this game going? I'll tell you where!
This is going straight to the pool room.
Because that was amazing. Playoff P, you gun. You love to see it. He stepped up. Took all your criticism and told you to go get fucked. I'm Paul George. You love it. That's awesome. So Playoff P is the NBA Australia approved performer of the night. Trae Young, Gallo, Lou Will, boom, right there. Now let's go to the opposite of that. Who is Spud of the night, Jimmy?
Spud of the night.
Spud of the Bulgrie. The Sixers, Tobias Harris, 2 of 11, 4 points. Ben Simmons shot 4 shots, went 4 of 14 from the line. Those two combined have a $350 million worth of contract. You got 4 points from Tobias, you got 4 shots from Simo, and you got 4 of 14 from the free throw line from Simmons. Dwight Howard was a minus 14. The Sixers bench, Shake and George Hill, 2 of 10 combined in the biggest game of the season at home. Your role players aren't stepping up. Your superstars aren't stepping up. Unbelievably spud-worthy. Ben Simmons saying before game 5, so after game 4, he's like, yeah, look, I need to be more aggressive to help my team win. I don't know, Ben. Is taking 4 shots in a game aggressive or not? And people are, oh, well, you see, he got fouled, so look, they weren't even letting him take shots. Nah. Nah. 14 of his free throws, 8 of them came on the back of Hakusimo. And if you want aggressive, Ben, it is running downhill, setting up the other dudes. The same sort of shit we saw in the first half, the third quarters. The big problem is it doesn't translate to the fourth quarter. When was the last time you turned around and went, oh, well, Ben Simmons led a big fourth quarter comeback, you know? This is the problem. If you can't hit fucking free throws, you've got zero confidence in your own shot-making ability. You're not going to take it to the rack every time because you're afraid of getting fucking fouled. And that's exactly what you're seeing now. But Tobias Harris, there is no excuse for Tobias Harris. Just absolutely sputting it up, like, unbelievably hardcore to a degree that you're just like, is he hurt? Like, what is happening? And then you're like, oh, no, he's just Tobias Harris. He's just a bit shit sometimes. And that is just an absolute Barry Crocker shocker, obviously. But that fourth quarter from Tobias Harris was one for the ages of spud worthiness, right? Because his entire second half doesn't make a shot. And in the fourth quarter goes, look, I see Kevin Huerter over there going 0 for 6. Fuck it. What do you reckon? I'm getting paid a shit ton of money. I'm going to play all 12 minutes of this fourth quarter and go 0 of 3. Get 0 rebounds, 0 assists, 1 turnover and a foul. I shit you not. That is Tobias Harris's fourth quarter. 0 points, 0 of 3 from the floor, no rebounds, no assists, a foul and a fucking turnover. I can shit on Simo as much as I want. He had 2 points at least in that quarter. He didn't take a shot though. What are you doing, Simmons? Seth Curry was the only bloke with a pair of fucking stones on him. Embiid went 1 of 4. He went 1 of 5, rather, Embiid. 4 of which were from 3. Joel, what the fuck are you doing? They went 5 of 17 in that fourth quarter. What an absolute travesty. What a disgrace. You're all fucking disgraces, the Sixers. Get out of here. You're all spuds. Who was old mate, no mates, though, Jimmy?
Old mate, no mates.
Who's got no mates today? Well, it's Ben Simmons going 4 of 14 from the free throw line, obviously. Look, it's, as I mentioned earlier, it's funny to laugh at Ben Simmons DMing, you know, the ladies, allegedly, the night before a game 5. Who's up? What's going on? Also, maybe hit some fucking free throws. You know, just saying. Dwight being Dwight was some shit. So basically before the game, he's like, hey man, we're the Sixers, we're war ready. He was a minus 14. That's definitely some old mate, no mates. So that entire Sixers team getting booed in their own house for shitting away a 26-point lead is old mate, no mates, hardcore. Rudy Gobert as well, though. Mook stepped over him. You love to see it. Absolutely. I love a good step over. The disrespect is hilarious. It's like, you're on the ground. You're in my right. I'm going to step over you. The AI to Ty Lue. It's some beautiful stuff. Mook stepping over Rudy in Utah. A place where he's like, yeah, Mark Heap's not coming to Utah because no one ever wants to go to fucking Utah. Beautiful. Some old mate, no mate shit right there. You love to see it. Speaking of which, for Rudy, who was panting of the night going to go to, Jimmy? getting stepped over Rudy. That's a bit of a panting. After letting the team get back into make a 6-point game that they eventually win. Then Rudy gets get by Reggie Jackson late. Put the Clippers back up 8. Just put him on an island. Reggie dropped one over the top of him. Beautiful to see. Then Rudy got again when T-Man absolutely crunched one on him. Oh, T-Yam. And an and-one. That's a second-year 6'5 guard dunking right over the defensive 3-time defensive player of the year in crunch time. Rudy Gobert got turned into wee-wee Cauley Stein. I'll tell you that much. That is just fucking brutal. That is a huge pantsing. That's definitely the school captain, or at least the guy who everyone thinks is like basically the school captain waiting, getting dunked on and getting dacked by, I don't know, pretty much everybody. So the Sixers, though. The Sixers. Just in terms of pantsings, can we just lay this out one more time? They had a 26-point lead. They were up 18 to start the fourth quarter. They gave up 40 in the fourth quarter. They lost at home in a game five in a series that was tied 2-2, and they didn't hit a shot for the last 6 minutes of the game. That, folks, you better believe that's a pantsing. All right, who was better than Lonzo Ball today, Jimmy?
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think he'll get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros, now I can be average. He's coming for everybody.
Coming for everybody, as long as I get my coach fired. Isn't that right, Lonzo? This was going to go to Matty T, Aussie Matty T, for a bit there, but then he had that foul on Trae Young that gave up the three-point free throw play, and you're like, ah, Matty, shit. So it's going to go to second year man, T-Man. That's right, T-Man. Goes in to start for Kawhi, but the best part is I loved his mindset. He came into it and went like, fuck it, I'm not Kawhi. I'm just going to do my job. Ends up with 13 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. Shoots 4 of 8 from the floor, 1 of 5 from downtown. Hits 4 of his 5 free throws. And completely obliterates the 3-time Defensive Player of the Year. That's awesome! Are you kidding? I loved his mindset of just getting out there, kicking ass, taking names, playing really well defensively, and yamming on Rudy Gobert. So, T-Man, today, you are better than Lonzo Ball. Because, remember, 13 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. That's 13 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. More than Lonzo Ball's ever had in a playoff game. Let's do some ENRs. Oh, geez, need a break. Right after this.
This is Cam Glidden.
This is Anthony Drimmick.
This is Mitch McCarron.
This is Jason Kadee.
This is Daryl McDonald.
Hey guys, this is Hugh Greenwood.
Yo, what's going on? This is Ellie.
This is Mark Worthington, or commonly known as Wurtho, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, let's do some yeah nahs. They're brought to you by thedailyliquor.com from East Ninth Brewing. If you're in Melbourne, you've got playoffs at the Wazoo. You've got footy season, and you can now drink beers in places that aren't your bloody home. So you better stock up. Don't go to the Bottle-O and risk getting the Rona. Do you see all those goddamn contact tracing places, the tier ones and the tier twos and shit? Fuck that. Go to the online Bottle-O, thedailyliquor.com. Check out all the amazing beeros and wines and cocktails they've got. All the packs are awesome. They're so good, and the price is always right. So go check it out. They've got an incredible array of beers. I love the three-quarter sample IPAs. Oh, and the DOS XPA. You can crush that till the cows come home. So if you're in the Melbourne metro area, you get same-day delivery if you order before noon. So go smash thedailyliquor.com right now. And if you bang in the code STRAYA, you get a free sixer of the DOS XPA. Because A, it's delicious, and B, you can drink a shit ton of it. So go check it out, thedailyliquor.com. Use the code STRAYA, get a free six from me while you're drinking, hanging out, being responsible, being over 18, watching some footy, watching some basketball. Love it. Right, let's do some yeah nahs. Lots of good ones today. Did the Pelicans do the right thing in canning Stan? Yeah nah, yep. You might think, oh, Jimmy, it's only 1 year, man. He didn't get a fair shake of the salve. Yeah, but look. I appreciated the idea at the time. You bring Stan in, you try to get them playing D, get them a defensive identity, a defensive culture of accountability. But as soon as you saw just how fucking badly that worked, like it wasn't working literally anywhere, and they were horrible defensively, and then you look at everywhere else, then it's just not working either. On offense, they're fucking just... On O, on D, they were a massive letdown. They were the biggest letdown all season. And you just had to watch them to go, none of this makes sense. Just, this is gross basketball. And when you're watching that and you're seeing how badly it's working across the board, I'm here for pulling the pin once you think you've seen enough. Like, do you think if you gave Stan another year to try to implement those defensive schemes that it'd click? And if you don't, then you fucking move on. You try another tack. And if you do, I mean, based on what? This is the thing. Like, if your team was that bad, look, I think consistency is important in teams, right?
Everybody talks about, like, we want to be like the Spurs. We want to be like the Spurs. We want to be like the Spurs. Well, the Spurs are all about sticking through it thick or thin, but it's also no team has Tim Duncan. The dude, the superstar, whoever just falls in line behind of, and he's got a great relationship with the coach who can ride them to the, you know, basically to the ends of the earth and also give them shit, you know, go hard at them, whatever. The thing is, you watch this team, you're like, well, it's going to be pretty tough to be consistent when it doesn't seem like our coach knows his ass from his elbow. You had to watch like three games of the Pelicans this year to go, ugh, this is gross. And if your team is that bad, I'm not entirely convinced there's that much upside in being consistent, because it's exactly what we saw in Detroit with Stan Van Gundy as well, right? It never changed. He brought in different people. It never changed. It never got better. And I don't think it was going to happen in New Orleans either. I think Stan's a great commentator. I'll be stoked to have him back on calls. As a coach, though, there were too many times this year like, this is a mess. This is just an out-and-out fucking mess. And whether it be rotations, whether it be schemes, it was all just slipshod and brutal. And you got Brandon Spindles-Ingram, you've got Zion, you got Lonzo, you got some weapons, and it just was a mess. So if you think it's the right thing to do to move on, I kind of got to agree with you there, because there was nothing in this year that showed you that there should be a bit of optimism heading into next year. Speaking of which, should Scott Brooks have been brought back by the Wiz, Jimmy? Yeah, nah. Now, this might have been the first time I've ever thought this about Scott Brooks, but maybe kind of yeah, because they were really good in the second half of the season once they had Rusty and Beal both healthy, and they were fun. You get Denny Avdija back. Rui Hachimura keeps, you know, building up his portfolio of pretty cool moves, and he was awesome in the playoffs. And look, you've got a couple of young dudes there. Who knows what happens? But, and look, I think I mentioned this on one of the posts on NBA Australia on the Facey. Look, I would have thought he probably would have gotten the extension where it's maybe a 1+1 or a 2 guaranteed one team option year just to see how you go through next year, and then you pull the pin. But, I'm also 100% here for saying, fuck Scott Brooks, right? Because if you are the Wizards, you've now got a decade to look back on of Scott Brooks as a coach, of him under-delivering, never getting you over the top. And like, is there anything in the past 10 years that you've seen where you go, Scott Brooks, he's the genius that's going to take us to the title? Or do you look back and go, well, there's 10 years of complete and utter mediocrity where he's helped develop some young dudes, but then we've hit a ceiling with him, and it's a bit shit now. And if you're concerned about, but he gets the most out of Rusty, well, that might be the problem as well, because he's just empowering Rusty. And maybe Scott Brooks' inability to hold Rusty accountable for all the dumb shit he does, and also all the great shit as well, but all the dumb shit he does, maybe Rusty needs another voice to go, Rusty, would you quit it the fuck out? You know? And that's where I feel like I'm landing with this now. Whereas you've empowered Rusty, he and Bill were really, really good. Maybe they can be better. Maybe someone else other than Scott Brooks. So fuck it. Try someone else. Hope for the best. Away you go. I'm kind of here for that. It's a bit weird, but I think that's where I'm at now. Rookie of the Year, Scott Baxter goes, Jimmy, yeah, nah. Hype over substance for LaMelo over Ant Edwards. Yeah, nah, fuck yeah. Look, I alluded to this earlier. You can't miss a third of the season versus a guy who plays every game bar one. If you want to say, but their stats are similar, and his stats are better in some cases. Yeah, sure. He also missed a third of the fucking season. Like, their stats are very close, and he still missed a third of the fucking season. And the way that it got fucking completely, I think it was, 84 first place votes, which is an outrage. It should have been much fucking closer. Ant-Man got better all the way through this season. He had a rough start, and I was shitting on him because it looked like he didn't know how to play basketball. Then it fucking clicked. He got better and better all the way through the season. He didn't hit a rookie wall. He powered through the end to the point where the last month and a half of the season, he was playing out of his fucking skin. He was averaging basically a 25-5-3, shooting it way better than he had as well. And away he went. So my point is, LaMelo goes to a half-decent team and was pretty good and had some good highlights, and then fell apart after his injury and then after Hayward was gone as well. Like, he was a shell of himself and they were shit as a team once Hayward was out and LaMelo was just fucking horrible. So if they're close in stats, boom. The bloke who played the entire season, didn't miss a third of it, and got better and better and better and better and better all the way through the year, gets the award. And it's like, yeah, cool. Well, you shouldn't punish LaMelo for being shit with Hayward out when you're also saying, oh, well, Anthony Edwards was a bit shit at the start when he didn't have Kat and D'Lo. Yeah, even when D'Lo and Kat was still out, though, Ant-Man was crushing it. He had some pretty rough games, but he still produced day in, day out. LaMelo was trick or treat for heaps of the year, and just because he had more SportsCenter highlights means he shouldn't win Rookie of the Year, right? It 100% comes down to no one wanting to watch Minnesota and seeing his development, which was massive all year. He went from a dude who could barely play basketball, seemingly, to an absolute fucking gun by the end of it. So, anyone who voted number one over LaMelo, over Anthony Edwards, just say that you didn't want to watch Minnesota. That's fine. But come on, put some fucking work in if you've got an All-NBA, All-Rookie vote. Killing me. Matty Owens, he asked Jimmy, was that KD game an All-NBA snub revenge game? Yeah, nah. Yeah, a little bit, but also probably nah. I think it was kind of an everything revenge game for KD yesterday, wasn't it? KD realized he had to do it, and he went out and did it. He had to shut up the doubters, and he did. And that was fucking awesome. But just think about how wild of a 24 hours this has been. We've gone from KD dropping a 49-17-10, reasserting himself as maybe the best player in the NBA. And in the meantime, we've had two coaches fired, LeBron's bitching and moaning, we've got the Rookie of the Year come out, Kawhi's gone, the Yaz blow a game at home, the Sixers blow a 26 point. It's absolutely insane. Absolutely gnarly. I love it. So good. What a day. Let's do an unpopular opinion of the day, though.
Now look at me, please. Look at me.
Look at me. I think the Sixers still win this in seven. I think this is where they need to be. Backs against the wall, shitting lead after lead away. Go into Atlanta and win it. Win game 16, come home, win it in seven. That's how you 100% get your fan base on board. Putting him through hell, then winning them over right at the end. At the same time, anyone who thinks that I'm being unduly critical of Ben Simmons, blow it out your ass. He went 4 of 14 from the free throw line. That is a disgraceful line. Yes, we all have bad days. We all have rough games. But come on, man. I think this is the fact that he has gone so badly from the free throw line during the playoffs means it's all mental, very clearly. He admitted it today as well, and that's fine. But we've now got 4 or 5 seasons worth of Ben Simmons not really improving his shooting, not improving his free throws. They're getting worse. And then getting into the free throw. Of course, this is disgraceful. Your job as a professional basketball player is to get better. Like, what are you doing? So I think the unpopular opinion of the day is, like, is it unpopular to say that there is like a 99% chance that Ben Simmons gets traded this offseason? Like, no matter what happens, I think Morey is just going to be like, yeah, nah. What can we get for him? And you do feel like if they had to pull the trigger on the Simmons for Harden trade, that easily be favorites to win the title. But this is the thing. You can't have an O and D. Look, it's a 3-and-D player, right? Simmons at this point is an O and D player because he's giving you so little on offense. And you can say, look, ah, oh, but he generates all these points and all these 3-point looks for Seth Curry, for Shake Milton, for Matisse Thybulle, for big Joel Embiid. But if he's also not giving you that downhill offense that he's so good at, being hyper-aggressive, running, cutting, his little baseline cuts are beautiful. The missed dunk he had was absolutely horrifying. But the thing is, if you can't hit your free throws, you become a zero on offense because suddenly you're not engaged in the play. You're not engaged in the way the quarter's going, the way your team's going. You're suddenly not playing winning basketball. You know? You've got to give it that same effort, that same intrinsic sort of push through to make your teammates successful as well that you have in the first three quarters of the game. You can't then just stop it. Killing me. Speaking of which, let's go to Outback Takehouse. It's Thursday at Outback, and you know what that means? Oh, yeah, 2-for-1 delicious blooming onions. What's that? No one knows what the fuck that is. Oh, geez, neither do I. What is it? A deep fried onion that looks like a flower? What the fuck are you talking about? How is that Aussie? All we do with a fucking onion back home is chuck it right on the barbie, cook it till it's as black as a dog's guts, and chuck it on a saucer, you idiots. You fat bastard Yanks. Anyway, 2-for-1, blooming onions, only at Outback. And it goes great with a flame grilled take. And today's flame grilled take is, of course the Yaz are going to lose this series. There is no way in Adam Silver's NBA that an LA team is going to get knocked out by a team from Utah. And also, Doc Rivers made sure to put his bench in today to shit up this game in order to get them down 3-2, because he knows that running through this adversity is the only way this Philadelphia city will get behind this Philadelphia team. Only at Outback. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with the fact that Doc has consistently blown leads in playoff series by playing bench units too long and playing players he shouldn't play. Too long, tough one. Ben Simmons for Dame Lillard. Who says no?
The Blazers.
Yeah. Ben Simmons for what do you reckon? CJ McCollum.
Who handles the ball then for Philly?
Yeah, it's a good point. Tricky stuff. Anyway, let's be back with Australian Player Watch. Oh, it's not great today. Right after, let's say this one.
This is Chris Anstey, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, let's talk about Noah, but what do Chris Paul, the currently Rona besotted Chris Paul, NASA commander Scott Kelly, Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian, all have in common? Well, they've all got incredible experiences and they've all created audio courses to teach you what they've learned. They're on Noble, which is a new app where the world's top experts teach new skills in bite-sized audio courses. It's basically like Spotify for learning stuff. I love it. I talk about this all the time, how I'm either listening to Noble or the Squid's bloody Thomas and Friends story time. I was actually listening to some System of a Down the other day. The kid did not like that, I tell you that much. Anyway, the bloke from NASA talks about what he's learned from a career in space. Chris Paul talks about the performance benefits of a plant-based lifestyle. Didn't help keep that Rona away. Alexis Ohanian teaches you how to launch a startup. And there's over 100 other experts waiting to teach you something new. So, if you're keen on learning some new stuff today, download Noble from your app store. Bang in the code STRAYA and get 20% off. It's awesome. I absolutely love Noble. Seriously, it gets smarter every time I listen to it, which is good because I'm a dumbass. So it's pretty good. Right, Australian Player Watch. As mentioned, not a banner day for the Aussies. Jingling Joe Ingles, look, he was all right, but yeah, not great when it came to the old Sixers and Sixers at Hawks game, as mentioned with Simo. Look, Matty T was okay, but either way. So Ben Simmons, look, Box Hill Benny, the bricklayer, Benny the Bricky, 8 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, pretty good assist rate, 1 steal, 1 block, 2 turnovers. But come on, man, 2 of 4 from the floor, 4 of 14 from the free throw line. The way the Sixers win games is hyper-aggressive, Simo. What did you see in the first, what, 3 quarters of the game today? Hyper-aggressive, Simo. What did that correlate with? Big Sixers leads. You just need him to be super aggressive. And away you go. But nope, not there all day. Aussie Matty T played 24 minutes, went 2 of 2 from 3. That was beautiful. 6 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 steal, 1 turnover. Obviously that pretty brutal foul on Trae Young, and was out there for a lot of the stretch run because none of the rest of that Sixers bench was really helping. But Matty T was pretty handy. Good to see him out there in crunch time too. The foul was a bit tough. Jingles had 12, 6, and 6 today. 12 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. 2 steals, went 4 of 8 from the floor. His amazing shooting finally from downtown hit a bit of a snag. He went 1 of 5 from downtown. As mentioned, that late one where it would have cut the lead to 3, I was certain it was down. Jingles was 1 of 4 at that point. He's like, oh, I don't know if I want to shoot it. Fuck it, I'll shoot it. Look good. Just clipped a little bit of iron, little bit too much of iron, and away he went. So 12, 6, and 6. Jingles had been absolutely crushing it from downtown. But here you go. You know, was it 14 of 21 or something he was from 3 before that one? So, well, tough one. Right. There you go. That's the Australian Player Watch. Really quick, Shane Hill, shoot a shoot, shoot your shot, light him up award.
He threw it down. Are you healed? Are you healed?
Praise the Lord, I'm healed.
Praise the Lord, I'm healed. It is the Shane Hill.
Shoot a shoot.
Shoot your shot. Light 'em up award. Bit of a different one today because Big Simo Ben Simmons. The free throws. The free throws, the free throws, the free throws. Now, oh, I ask you how someone as good at basketball could be this bad at shooting free throws in playoffs. And you would go, Jimmy, I'm not entirely sure. It's probably got to do with something in his noggin. And I'd be like, you're about right. So, because a bloke goes from 61.2% in the regular season, you're like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool, to 32% in the playoffs. He's not Ben Wallace. Like, what are we doing here? This is crazy. He started off the playoffs ignominious fashion, 0 of 6 from the free throw line. He backed it up with 0 of 3. Remember, he was 0 for 12 at one point, then went 5 of 11 in that fourth game against Washington. 5 of 8 against Washington after that, then 3 of 10 against Atlanta, and starts there again. He goes 0 of 2 in game 2, 4 of 8 in game 3, 1 of 5 in game 4, and then today, 4 of 14. So he's 5 of 20 across the last two games. That is absolutely brutal. Now, as I tweeted out, 10 of 35 from the free throw line in this series. You can't be the Fresh Prince of fucking anything when you're going 4 of 14 from the free throw line in a playoff game. Like, you can have a cool chain, rad, hit a fucking free throw. You can have cool fashion style, cool, hit a fucking free throw. You can have a sick Ferrari, great, hit a fucking free throw. You can have a nice Kardashian, whatever, hit a fucking free throw. Like, it's not about anything beyond being aggressive, figuring out your mentals, and this helps your team win. You can say all the time, oh, I need to be aggressive. I'm just here to win a championship. I don't care about individual accolades. All right, then how about in a game where you blow a 26-point fucking lead, you don't miss 10 free throws? That's just asinine. What are you doing? You can say all the shit you want in the world, but if you don't back it up, that's where it becomes a bit of a disgrace. And it's a bit of a shocker. That was a horrible one. So the Shane Hill shoot your shot. Simo, better practice those fucking free throws. Right. What about the Patty Mills Game Day Baller Twitter check-in? Bit more, upbeat. Oh, yeah. So the Patty Mills Game Day Baller Game Day Twitter check-in today is Patty's Instagram. Great one from yesterday. The Olympics are a celebration of sport, passion, and deep commitment to flying our country's flag. If we aren't competing or training, we love to support each other in their journeys. Call out memories are watching the women's Aussie sevens team win gold in 2016, observing the detail and camaraderie necessary for a synchronized swimming team, and cheering on Aboriginal beach volleyballer at Tahlequah. That's awesome. There's a great picture of Patty in the stands at the Olympics with his Aussie flag draped around him, looking like a legend, Aussie flag on his cheek, cheering on his fellow Aussies. You love it. Now, if we can get him and Simo and Matty T in the same backcourt, the same team, we might win gold ourselves. What do you reckon? Right, let's do some game preview for tomorrow.
Game preview.
Thanks, Inadvertent Bane.
Not a problem, Jimmy. How's it all going?
Ah, yeah, my foot's still fucky, but painkillers and the anti-inflammatories are working, so feeling a bit better today. I can actually sort of stumble around a little bit better. I was actually able to take the squid to daycare, so happy days. Anyway, we went 1 of 2 on the picks today. Missing out on Utah. We nailed the Atlanta pick. I told you yesterday. I thought Philly would still win it, but Atlanta were +6.5. And as mentioned, thought that Philly would win. It would be close. And I was sitting there going, well, I think I've nailed that one. Nailed the pick. Didn't quite nail the outcome, but still, here we are. And Utah, especially when I think we had them at like, what, -2.5? Is that right from yesterday? Let's have a check. -2.5 yesterday. That was before the Kawhi news. It blew out to, I think, -8.5. But we had them at -2.5. And when they were absolutely lighting up in the first quarter, I'm like, hooray, we're going to crush it. Nope. So, tough one, Utah. And I feel like that's one of those big things where you just sort of wrap your head around and go, Utah just losing 3 straight. This Clippers team going from 0-2 down to winning 3 on the trot after coming back from 0-2 down against the Mavs is absolutely crazy. So, I don't know, man. We might have to rethink the way we look at this, the Clippers team from here on out. But without Kawhi, it's going to be a bit of a stretch. Anyway, game 6 tomorrow. We have Nets, Bucks. This should be a very, very fun game. Game 6 in Milwaukee. It's at 10:30 Australian Eastern Time. The Bucks are 5.5-point favorites at home with James Harden no longer on the injury report for the Nets, apparently. So he's good to go. No Kyrie Irving. I'm taking the Bucks -5.5. I think they have a really good response to the KD beatdown they just copped. And I think this series is going to go 7. Now, the other day I did say if the Nets can somehow win game 5, they win game 6. But I think after watching how hobbled Harden was, I can't really trust the Nets to come out on the road and really show up the Bucks. It doesn't sit right because I'm trying to wrap my head around and go, look, does Harden come out, have a much better game 6? Does KD struggle a little bit more and that sort of balances out and the Nets still win? Or do the Bucks have just enough answers and the rest of their dudes step up a little bit better than they did in game 5 and they get the win? And that's where I'm leaning at the moment. So I'm going to go Bucks -5.5. I'm not going to feel great about it. I will take the under. I think it was 219.5 points as well. But yeah, I don't feel confident about either of them. So there you go. Bucks -5.5. We'll see how we go. And obviously, same tip as for yesterday for Daily Fantasy. Giannis. Keep an eye on Bryn Forbes, especially at home. As well for your cheapies. And on the Nets side, obviously KD. I think pick Mike James. And well, I had El Jefe Green last time. He probably won't back it up with a massive game. So I'd say probably have a look at Joey Harris. He might be a bit undervalued now as well. So check it out. Anyway, go to DraftKings Australia. Do that. DKNG.co/Australia. Have a fun time playing daily. Love it. All right, that's it for today. What a day. What a day. Absolutely bonkers. We'll have more follow-up on everything tomorrow, obviously, because we only have the one game to talk about. So we'll talk a bit more about the coaching, etc. like that. And really sort of drill into it a bit more. And that'll be kind of fun. And obviously the Boomer stuff. So that'll be good. Right, so check that out tomorrow. Go check out World Wrestling Straya over on YouTube. Adam is crushing at the moment. Subscribe to that. He'll give you a big, big, big insight into the world of wrestling and all the Aussies involved. Get around NBAAustralia.com/shop. Buy some merch. Chuck us a rating and review on your your podcast apps. Whatever you use to listen, if you can rate and review, it does help. Come on, I don't ask for much. I do this every day. Bloody hell. TheDailyLeaker.com. Go there, use the code STRAY, get a free sixer. Download the Noble app from your app store. Bang in the code STRAY, get 20% off there. Get smarter while you're drinking beers. How good's that? Big thanks to Gotta From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Go check out the new band, House Hats. Running out of time. Their album is out now and it's awesome. Big thanks also go to Joshua De Laurentiis, Fascinator, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, iOS, Sex Jedi, Green, and Dozers for the tunes you hear throughout the show. Smash them all on Bandcamp, Triple J Unearthed, and Facey. And remember, NBA Australia supports Australian bands, so should you. Check them out on Spotify, Apple Music, all that good stuff. However you listen to your tunes. I've been using Spotify more lately, but anyway. Right, we're going to close out today's show with a quick diary of Stephen Adams. That'll be fun. And we'll catch you tomorrow, you dickheads. What a day. What a day. Unbelievable stuff. Right. NBA Stray saying, look after yourselves, would ya? And later, Hosanna! Or a brew. It's your old pill, Stephen Adams here, brew. I'll just pop on by for my latest diary entry, brew. So here goes, Oh, dear diary, brew. That's me, brew. Stephen Adams. Oh, but you knew that already, because you're my diary, brew. You know all my deep, dark secrets, Like how I think it might have been me who got Coach Stanfire, brew. I mean, after last week when I keyed Lonzo's dad's car and scratched Love Coach Stan into it, just to see those two absolute lunatics rustle in the car park, man. I then turned around the other day and scratched Eat My Bug Dick, Love Stan, into our boss's car. What's his name, David? But shush, don't tell anyone, and I think the fallout might be a bit rough, so, yeah. Anyway, brew, bit of a crazy week. I drove to Mexico. I'm trying to buy a boot to sail to NZ, brew, to visit my mum and dad. Just waiting on some boot hungy provisions as well, man, as I'm trying to figure out how to do yacht hungies. That'd be fun as. I think I can do them in the water, man. It's going to be pretty gnarly. But yeah, I'm going to go sail off and visit my mum and dad, brew. But It turns out Coach Stan got fired, bro, so I'm in a bit of shock, eh? Because Coach Stan loved me, bro, and played me heaps, man. So I'm a bit worried, bro, about what this means for me, bro, and what happens if I get traded again, bro. Because that would be pretty terrible, man, because I love it here in New Orleans, man. And also, it'd break my best friend Zion's heart, eh, bro? So, yeah, here's hoping I get to stay in New Orleans, bro, because I really do love it here with Zion and everyone. Even that weirdo, that weird little kid, Lonzo. I love all my New Orleans hungies from Zion's mum's backyard. I love the beignets. I love the smell of the place. And I love hurricanes, man. Those awesome big long drinks where it's actually as big as I am. So it's great, man. So, but what happens if a new coach comes in and figures out that you can't really play me and Zion together, bro? I don't know, but I'm not really stoked on it, eh? So, anyway, bro, that's something that I can worry about on the boot. So for now, I've got to go keep bartering and negotiating with my friend Boot Jose, who sold me my boot. I'm going to figure out what provisions I'll need for my boot hungies, man. So, righto. Till next week, eh? Cheer, cheer. Love, Stephen Adams, bro.